Thank you, Richard, for that update. And good morning, guys. Glad that you're with us this morning. And just in regards to the giving, it's not commanded, it's an opportunity. And I just want to say how proud I am of our church because of what we've been doing the last couple of weeks. You know, last week we handed out 20 angel tree gifts, and we had several people, come by and say, hey, where are the gifts? Where are the tags for the gifts? And they were all gone. Matter of fact, someone took mine, which was awesome. And so we're going to deliver those this week. I just love the response of our church family with their generosity. You know, with the clothing drive as well, has been excellent. And I just want to say thanks. You know, and also thanks so much for donating so much to my box that I got pied on Friday. I really appreciate that. But I know the store Bakkens appreciate it more. So we've received them. I hope my prayer is well and that we have set them up for in their transition as they go back. So glad you guys are back with us. And then, too, you know, also with the response to the fasting. You know, I know Travis talked about this in the first week about resistance. Who's experienced any resistance to the fasting? I have. It's been significant. You know, and so that tells me if we're experiencing significant pushback on fasting in this season, then that means that we are doing the right thing. Because if Satan doesn't care what we're up to, then we're probably not on the right path. Agreed? And so I would say whether you've started or you haven't, or you've fallen off the wagon or you haven't, like it doesn't matter. Let's continue to do it together because I think God's going to reveal his will for our church. Also, if you got a chance to see Tanya's blog from this week as well, Tanya, thanks so much. I don't know where she is in the room in a second, but if you hadn't had a chance to read that, do that. She talked a little bit about it on Tuesday at the prayer service. By the way, this coming Tuesday is her last prayer service for 21, so I'd encourage you to be there. But I thought it took an amazing amount of courage just to say, gosh, I don't have it all together. You know, and I appreciate how she led us through that because the reality of it is this, right? That's more resistance, I feel. I don't have it all together, and I don't think we're supposed to pretend like we have it all together as much as we like to put on that face, right? And so, and speaking of which, yesterday, we'll throw up a pic, for those of us that were, there's our team that went to Dallas to serve yesterday. We got a chance to pray over that sweet lady, Linda, and just some stuff that's going on in her life. She was also a volunteer. Me, Travis, and Tim, and Tammy and her sister Claudia, her spiritual sister Claudia, were volunteering yesterday. And I'll just tell you, like, it's humbling to share the gospel with someone who may or may not know it. Like, and I think just for me, like, that just did my heart so well. And thankfully, they had a little sheet for us so if we got tongue tied, we could do that. But just to put yourself in that kind of servant position, right? And there was feet washing there as well. I mean, it was a lot more than what I expected. And so I would encourage us next year to just put that Saturday, a couple Saturdays before Christmas, aside on our calendar. It's humbling to go serve and not expect anything in return because what you really come into contact with is what Jesus has done and is doing for each of us. Right, and like whether you have everything you need or you don't, like life is no respecter of person, but Jesus is. He is a respecter of person, and that's why we sing. So thank you guys so much. I'm really proud, and I hope you're encouraged. I'm really proud of our congregation and how we've responded. Gino's done the sermon guide. You could grab that on the way out on the table, you know. And so here's our fourth week of Advent. And today's message is going to be the Advent of Peace. You know, the first 3 weeks is Travis introed the sermon or this series, "'Tis the Season for Changes." I think we've all been experiencing that. Week two was to be like the shepherds, praising and glorifying God as they were told of Jesus' birth last week. And this, I think, spawned Tanya's blog post. Week three was to make room in your heart for Jesus, right? We don't want to be the innkeeper or the inn of our church, right? We don't want our church to be the inn where there's no room for Jesus. And so for the final week of Advent, I want to focus solely on the peace that Jesus offers you and me. That's what I want to focus on today. And we're going to look at two passages today outside the nativity passage, John chapter 1 and Colossians 1. So we're going to be outside the typical passages. So just go ahead and stick your thumb in John 1 real quick. But I came across this poem, and I'm not like this huge poetry guy, like I need to read poetry all week, but I came across this poem called Christmas Bells by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Anybody remember that from school? A little bit, right? And so I just want to read this. I thought this was really good, and I want you to pay attention to the last stanza. I'll get there, and I'll say, hey, here's the last stanza. But it says, I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. I think we're all familiar with that if we've sang a Christmas carol at some point, right? And thought how, as a day had come, the belfries, that's where the bells hang out, right? The belfries are at the belfries of all Christendom, had rolled along the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Till ringing and singing on its way, the world revolved from night to day, a voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth, goodwill to men. You have to look up sublime later. Then from each black accursed mouth, the cannon thundered in the south, and with the sound, the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. It was as if an earthquake rent the hearthstones of a continent and made forlorn the households born of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Here's the last two stanzas. And because I think this is the challenge for the Christmas season about understanding where peace is, and in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Agreed? Like, we all feel that from time to time, but then there's this, and I think this is our great hope. Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail, with peace on earth, goodwill to men. Right? The wrong shall fail, the right prevail. And here's the thing, like, you're like, oh, I'm so glad I'm the right. No, we're the only right because we believe in Jesus. Jesus is the right. If it wasn't for Jesus, we would all be wrong. Right? So I caught myself like, oh, thank goodness I'm on the winning team. That's true, but it's not to a certain extent. But thank God that God is not dead, nor doth he sleep in the ground anymore. Agreed? Agreed. And so with that, I want to push into John chapter 1. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. And as I said, this is not the typical nativity story, but I hope to illuminate a little bit what's happening behind the birth of Jesus. And in verse 1 of John chapter 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. And in him was life, and the light was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The darkness has not overcome it. And so, and just very quickly, verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Jesus is the Word. The Greek word there for the Word is logos. And a word, if you think about it, a word is, of course, something that embodies an idea. So as John was writing his gospel, he decided to call Jesus the Word, because somehow that word encapsulates who Jesus is, the logos. Right? John uses this as a title for making the point that the fullness of God's revelation, don't miss this, the fullness of God's revelation is contained in, expressed by, and personified in Jesus Christ. It's the Word. He is contained, expressed, and personified in Jesus. The fullness of who God is, that revelation is magnified and revealed. The curtain has been pulled away, right, by Jesus. And in the beginning, so let's just reread verse 1. In the beginning was Jesus, and Jesus was with God, and Jesus was God himself. Jesus was God himself. And so I hope what you have in your mind is that nativity scene rattling around somewhere as we just have been singing about it. But in that manger, wrapped in swaddling clothes, was God's fullness revealed in the form of a baby. Right? God's fullness, his goodness, his kindness, his grace, his love, his power, his majesty, his strength, his might, his omnipresence, all of those things, all of who God's nature is revealed in the form of a helpless baby wrapped in clothes in a manger in a stable. Think about all the entrances that he could have made. He made that one. God chose to reveal himself in the form of a helpless baby. Man, why would God would you do that? Because what God thinks, what we think is strong, God says it's not really that strong. What we really think are our ways, or really God's like, no, here's my way. Let me show you a different way, right? Verse 3 says, all things were made through him. So don't miss this. In the form of a helpless babe, wrapped in swaddling clothes, in a manger, verse 3 of chapter 1 says this, exactly, all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made. Now, does that not break your head a little bit? Like, how in the world does that work? I don't understand how it works. It's just God reveals it, right? But all things were made. And so, if you think about it, not some of the things were made, not some of the things that we like, some of the things we don't like. Like, think about this. Past, present, future, all of creation, whether it's on the planet or inside the planet or in our hands or whatever gets invented next, like, all things were made through and for Jesus Christ. All things were made through and for Jesus Christ. Think about the best present you've ever unwrapped at Christmas. You got it? Like, hopefully it was last year. Mine, it wasn't, right? I mean, like, I don't know what it is, but there's something about being a childlike or being childlike at Christmas. Like, my greatest present ever, I got the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier, and my swag on my block, like, went through the roof. Like, everybody wanted to be at my house. It was the greatest. I could lay on it. It was so big. It was like the 7-foot aircraft carrier and my bed, and I had to step over it, but I could lay on it. Like, it was a trundle. It was that big, right? It was the best Christmas present I ever unwrapped. I freaked out. I was like, oh my gosh. I started crying, you know, glitter fell from the sky, all those things, right? Like, think about all the things, right? As a young, you know, what grade would I have been in? 4th grade, 5th grade, something like that. Like, all the manly stuff I wanted, all I just want to do is play with G.I. Joes and blow stuff up. I mean, that's it. Like, it's no wonder I like John Wick. That was the greatest present I've ever unwrapped. Think about that, right? So think about what you've unwrapped. Like, what was your greatest present? That was made by Jesus, if you believe the scripture. It's true. Like, he gives all things. He makes all things. All things were made through him, including G.I. Joe aircraft carriers. It's true, including your greatest present. Including the thing that you value the most, the thing that you get the identity from, Jesus made it as a way to say, hey, it's not about that, it's about me. Right? And so Jesus, the maker of all things, is also the giver of all things, even before you knew him. I came to Christ when I was late, when I was a young adult, after college. So I kind of knew who Jesus was. I knew what the Bible said. I didn't go to church. That wasn't a rhythm for me. Right, but even then, Jesus had hardwired me and prepped me to respond to him. Right, so I don't know where you are in your walk this morning. If you're not walking or you haven't been walking for a while, like, that's the conversation I had most yesterday. Was like, you know, I just haven't really been in church lately. I really feel like I want to follow the Lord, but I can't. There's too many things coming at me. But Jesus is the giver of all things as well as the maker of all things, and he's making things to be in your life to point you toward him. Whether you're up or you're down, you've got a lot or not enough, it's about him because he is the maker of all things and the giver of all things. Verse 4, in him was life, and then the life of a newborn baby. This is crazy. In the life of a newborn baby, life to its fullest was represented, and that light represents the light of men. Think about that for a second. Life to its fullest was represented on the first days of a human's life on the planet. And it doesn't get any fuller than that. And so here's the thing. You see, whatever we choose to light our lives by, right, is that light pales in comparison to the light that is provided by Jesus Christ. It pales in comparison. It says, verse 4, in him was life, and the light was the light of men. And in verse 5, it says, Jesus' light shines in the darkness, and the darkness shall not overcome it. It can't overcome it. Not only is it a brighter light, the darkness can't crowd out the light. Right, I spent a lot of time like trying to figure out how do eyes like or eyeballs like register candlelight, you know, and candles and all that. Like I just couldn't make it work. But if you think about it, like a single candle will light the darkness at all distances. It just depends on how good your eyes are to see it. Right, Jesus's light is lighting the way past, present, and into the future. And so if you want to understand, we want to have a better understanding of why the darkness cannot overcome the light of a baby, I want to invite you to turn your Bibles into Colossians 1, and we'll read in verse 15. This is what's going behind the scenes in Colossians 1, verse 15. It's a familiar passage as well. Colossians 1, 15. I love, you know, you want to talk about light. I love the subtitle of this passage, the preeminence of Christ, meaning there is nothing above him, the preeminence. In verse 15, Paul writes this, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Imagine that. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers, all things were created through him and for him. Verse 17 says, and he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. And through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. Making peace by the blood of his cross. And so in verse 15, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He is the image of the invisible God. In the form of a baby, as an adolescent, as we see him tagging away from his parents, right? And they having to go back and find him. I know to you parents who have middle schoolers, you're like, there's no way Jesus could be the image of God as a middle schooler. It's true. I hate to tell you. My kids aren't. Your kids probably aren't either, right? But it's true. And as an adult, going to the cross. He is the perfect icon of the image of the God the Father. And so you know what an icon is, right? Like we think of it as a logo. An icon is just what? The picture of past leaders on bills and coins. Like you've seen them, like what's on the nickel and the dime. And you ever wonder, like, I wonder if that's what they look like, right? Like, I wonder if that's really what they look like. Jesus is the perfect, incorruptible image of the invisible God. You want to know what God looks like? It's Jesus. You want to know what he acts like? He acts like Jesus. You want to know if we should look like him? We should act like Jesus. It's not that hard. And that's why his name is Emmanuel, meaning God with us. Jesus is revealed God in the flesh. And he is also the firstborn of all creation, meaning he existed before anything was made. Before he thought to make anything, he existed. He existed. And the Greek word there for firstborn is important. It's protokos. Protokos. And we get our English derivative form of prototype. Prototype. You ever think about prototypes? Jesus is the prototype. He is the firstborn of all creation. And we understand what prototypes are. Like who has a smartphone somewhere in their pocket right now or in their hand, right? We all understand. There we go. We got one hand, right? iPhones are better. But anyway, we all have a smartphone or smart devices. So when I think of prototype, I think iPhones, right? And sometimes it makes sense if wherever you are in your upgrade cycle to wait to buy the brand new version because there are bugs and kinks to be worked out. Who have ever gotten the new thing and it just didn't work as good as the old thing, right? Yeah, like that happens. Agreed? Like, the new version isn't always good as the old version, right? There's a reason why they brought classic Coke back, because new Coke was crap. I can't believe I just said that, but it wasn't in my notes, I promise. That's true, though. There's a reason why they brought old Coke back, OG Coke back, because new Coke wasn't good, and nobody wanted to drink it. Does anybody drink Coke anymore, really? Somebody? God bless y'all. God bless y'all. I don't. Well, sometimes. Also, the weird thing, if you've ever been on an airplane, the only place you drink ginger ale is on an airplane, too. I'm just saying. Anyway, we were talking about that when we were coming back from Thanksgiving. Like, nobody wants ginger ale except on an airplane. But anyway, I digress. My friends, I digress. I'm sorry. There are no bugs or kinks to work out with the prototype of Jesus. There are no bugs or kinks to work out in the prototype of Jesus. He does not grow into his perfection as he was growing up. He was born perfect. He was born all God. He was born sinless, and he died sinless. And so don't apply like our human experience to the nativity and the preeminence of Jesus in the form of a baby. He did not grow into himself and finally find himself and then go do the Father's work. He was doing the Father's work from the moment he entered the planet, because he was doing the Father's work before he entered the planet, and he's still doing the Father's work as he left the planet. We're here. He's still on the throne. And so from the moment he enters the planet through his birth, his perfection is visible and radiant. That is why the darkness cannot overcome his light. See that? In the form of a helpless baby, the darkness cannot overcome his light. And so he is the firstborn, the beginning of all of how all humans were intended, you and me, to be created, perfect and sinless. So that's what we're going back toward, right? That's what we're trying to get our way back to, is an existence that's not marred by sin or heartache or distrust. And we have a hope and a future and a promise because of Jesus' birth. That's how we're supposed to live. Verse 16, all things were created, both invisible and visible, and those things are for him. I get the visible thing. The thing that makes my brain hurt is the invisible stuff. Like, what does that even mean? Because we can't see it. And I don't know about you, if you're like me, but if I can't see it, I don't think about it. Maybe we should. Have you ever ascribed that kind of greatness to Jesus? He's created the things that we can't even understand or see yet, but it will be all revealed one day in the end times. I'm just saying. But verse 17, I love this. In him, all things hold together. Not only did he create what we see and what we don't see, he makes it all work. I don't know if you're like me, but when I think about the list that I have to do, like at home and at work and in just in life in general, like, you know, I've got three different types of lists and they all somehow have to correlate and overlap on each other. You know what I realize? I can't make it all work together. Whoever feels that way, I do. Whoever feels that way at Christmas, like we're supposed to be happy and joyous and singing Christmas carols and drinking eggnog, which is gross, but that's okay, right? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, we're supposed to be doing all these things, but it never works out. In Jesus, all things hold together. They all work. And so what I want to say to you this morning is that whether things are going right or not, he can and will make them work for your betterment, for those of us that are in Christ Jesus. The Greek word for hold is synesthemi, which is where we get our English word systems or systemic. That's where we get that word. And so the definition of a system is a set of things working together as parts of an interconnected network. That's just the definition, right? That's a system. Like, did you know that we're a system as a church? Like, how we act and live in here is a system. How we act and live out there is a system. How we live and act towards one another on a one-on-one basis is a system. How we worship is a system. Like, we all understand this. And here's the thing. We get this, one, and excuse the example, but we all have, for some reason I was thinking smart devices when I was writing this week. We all have smart devices in our lives, Agreed? Like we all have a phone or a TV or a computer or something, and those things only work as part of an existing Wi-Fi network. Agreed? Like, and by the way, like I never buy an iPad that has the connectability through the, you know, my phone provider, and every time I'm like, oh, I never knew that. There's always Wi-Fi until Wi-Fi doesn't work, right? And then you're like, oh, come on, like I need a signal here, right? But we have an internet provider that brings us a signal, a modem that takes that signal and interprets the signal to those devices. All that's working all the time, running around in the background. All that's working around. We have to have a Wi-Fi network to broadcast that signal, right? That's why the camera's working right now. So glad you guys are with us. That's why all the stuff in the booth works. Like, all that's all connected and happening all the time. And so we have, like, my device right now in my back pocket is probably thinking, like, does it have a good Wi-Fi connection or not? Like, it's always thinking about its connection. Do you know that just like smart devices, our hearts and souls are always actively searching for some usable signal to be a part of? You ever just stopped and thought about that? Like, just like our devices that's trying to ping the server or trying to download a song or upload something to YouTube or Twitter or TikTok or whatever. Whatever. But anyway, right? I mean, like our hearts are always searching, and our souls are always actively searching for some usable signal to be a part of. And it could be friends or family or relationships, sports, entertainment, buying stuff, convenience. Talk about Christmas. Like, I just want my gifts to come to me. I don't want to go to the store anymore. Like, come on, Amazon, you could get it done, right? Like, but that's the thing, right? But there are times when we look for those things to be our meaning and our identity. And then whatever piece of the identification that they offer is fleeting. Get that? Like, and we talk about that a lot here, right? It's the, we exchange the intangible of God for the fleeting tangible things of this world. And just like when we are connected to a network, but for some reason you can't download what you need, like we talked about that a second ago, like it says I'm connected, I've got a Wi-Fi signal, but then I open my browser and what happens? You're not connected to the internet, like the four worst words on the in the English language that replace some assembly required since it's Christmas time. Agreed? Like, have you ever been connected and like you're like, it says you're not connected? I don't understand it, right? And if you're honest with yourselves, like, we can't navigate this world anymore without being connected to the internet. Agreed? Like all the stuff's all in the cloud somewhere, you know? We were laughing about that yesterday. You know, and Edith said that. She's like, to be honest, you can't do anything without the internet anymore. She said that this week. And here's the thing, if you're really honest, like, really honest, like, I'm using this as a joke, but if you're really honest with yourself, we can't navigate this world and eternity without Jesus. We can't. But how often do we mark our lives with trying to find joy and fulfillment out of something other than the gospel? Other than the gospel. Our heart and souls are first and foremost looking for a valid signal. A valid signal that only comes from Jesus. And it's only interpreted by our, you know, we have modems in us, a spiritual modem. You know what he's called? The Holy Spirit. He's also God, right? Only could be interpreted by the Spirit, because in Jesus, all things hold together. All things hold together. If it's by God, then only God can interpret. And what I love is at any moment, this is what we were talking about yesterday, at any moment we can decide to say yes to Him. It doesn't matter what we've done. It doesn't matter where we've lived. It doesn't matter what we've done in our past. It doesn't matter what we did yesterday morning or last night, or I did that thing I said I wasn't going to do, or my life's not working out and I'm raging against the world and just lashing out at everybody. Like, we all come in, we all have those seasons and those moments, but it doesn't matter, because Jesus in His will and purpose for our lives are always ready to be told to us on the other end of the line. Just waiting. He's like, pick up the phone, text at me somewhere on social media. Like, He's just waiting for us to say yes to Him. And it's because he is the firstborn of all creation. He is the prototype. He is the model. Nobody else. It's him. It's him. And how often do we come across people who confuse or think it's about this, not that? We make it about an effort or an action step. That's why I'm like, it's okay if you mess up on the fast. Like, it's not about perfection. We're just following in his footsteps. It's okay that you don't have the words to share the gospel. Like, just insert yourself into the process. Because we'll never do anything if we just stay where we are. Right? That's not a good sign. Well, there you go. We're blowing up. So not only is Jesus the firstborn in all creation, he is also the firstborn from the dead. Verse 18 says this, back in 1 Colossians. And he is the head of the body of the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. Jesus' death is the prototype for our deaths as well. His life is the prototype for our life. His death is the prototype for our death, because his death gives life. You know Jesus, you have life. Because here's the thing, the only way for something to be reconciled to God and that surpasses the impossible gulf, like if you're pressing into God, like what happens with me is I become acutely more aware of how short and shortcomings my shortcomings are. I become acutely aware of how really, like, I don't have it all together. And that's grace, because how much more do we understand what we've been saved from when we are able to see with more clarity what we are being rescued from, right? Because that there's that impassable gulf that exists between us and the Father, which is bookended by God's perfection, his perfection, and unfortunately, our imperfection, because something dead in sin has to become alive. And Jesus' death gives life. It's because of Jesus' death and resurrection that you and I can have peace with God and become fully alive. So you want to talk about peace at Christmas? Let's talk about peace all the days of our lives. If we're walking the planet with the knowledge that we have peace with God the Father, then I wonder if the peace that we're all supposed to have at Christmas is just a worldly lie anyway. Like, have we ever just stopped and considered that? Like, all this stuff that we're supposed to do, maybe it's a distraction from Satan to distract us from actually pushing in to the peace that we already have, because I don't have to do everything right to have a relationship with God anymore. Talk about peace. Like, that's peace. What about, you know, if peace is because of freedom, then that means we should be more free because of the peace. Agreed? So if you're not more free, I question what kind of peace that we're actually trying to hold on to and pursue. Because if you're not free, I guarantee it's not peace. Because when there is no peace, no priest, there is no peace, there is no freedom. There is no freedom. It's because Jesus' death and resurrection that you and I can have peace with God and become fully alive. Our lives should follow his, and as we give our lives away, we've been doing this for weeks now, as we give our lives away, not into service of ourselves or our needs, or even necessarily to the service of the needs of the people in this room, but to the service of those who are not a part of this church family, when we give our lives away, guess what happens? It brings life and light to a broken and dark world that is looking for just a flicker of a flame. Just a flicker of the flame. That's why we keep asking. Because I'll tell you what, like, yesterday wasn't that convenient for me. Like, I was up early. I was up early the day before. Like, I was kind of tired. It is humbling to say I was humbled to share the gospel with someone who needed to be reminded of it. And it's because when I do that, what I'm reminding myself of is I need to hear it too. Because I don't have it. I don't have it all together. And if it's not about God, then who is it about? And I have the opportunity to get my little happy behind off the throne and say, Jesus, actually, that's your chair. It's not my chair. That's your chair. Our lives should follow His. Our life, our church's life, should be bringing light to the world who doesn't know Him. Should. It should. You know, and if you really want to know how good we're doing, like, let's ask the people that we should be ministering to if they have peace because of us or not. Oh my gosh, like, that's something. I don't know if I'm ready to hear that answer yet, right? Because I think we're just scratching the surface. We're just scratching the surface of what we could do. Because we have an unlimited God who has put limitless resources inside each of us right here. There are so much spiritual resources couched in the flesh of our bodies that are just waiting to come out. They're just waiting to come out. And they weren't put here just to stay here. That's freedom. Talk about freedom to just be who God's created you to be. Not in perfection, just to be living and active. Like, that's freedom. That's what excites me. I hope that excites you too. And I'm so encouraged by our church's response. I'm so encouraged by our church's response. Acts 26:23 says this. I hope it's on the board. That life, and again, this is back to that our lives, as we give it away, should bring life to others. Acts 26:23 says that Christ must suffer, and that being the first to rise from the dead, He would proclaim light both to our people and to the Gentiles. That's what happened. Darkness didn't overcome it, His life. They thought it did. And then 3 days later, there was light bursting forth from the grave, right? And if you know Him, you understand what that feels like because you have felt the light come forth from your spirit and your soul. And what does the Bible say in the Old Testament about hearts? That He has removed a heart of stone. There is no blood, no feelings in a heart of stone. But He removes the heart of stone in what? Gives us a heart of flesh. Hallelujah. He gives us a heart of flesh. Verses 19 and 20 back of Colossians. In Jesus, the fullness of God was pleased to dwell through Jesus to reconcile to Himself all things. Or to say it another way, to mend a relationship that was broken and marred by sin, whether on heaven or on earth, Jesus had to die. The only way that mend something broken is through the death of Jesus Christ. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how perfect you are or if you just ignore Him, right? I spent most of my life trying to ignore where God was in my life. And the whole time He was like, hey, I'm right here. Hey, come this way. I'm right here. And I was like, no, I'm good. I'm going to go do my, you know, college thing, and I'm going to go have a life that I think is going to give me hope and meaning and fulfillment. And it was like I was drinking sand, right? Like, have you ever, like, and we've all done this. We all have the sand that we prefer to drink instead of the water that Jesus offers, right? But the only way to mend that relationship that was marred by my sin, because I could care less with what He was up to. Jesus made a peace for all of us by the blood of His cross. Like, that's the peace that you and I are supposed to have. It's not some worldly peace where everything's perfect and there's snow falling on the outside. It's not a Christmas tree. It's not the presents under the tree. It's not the rat race of this world and trying to get ahead. It's not any of that. It is the peace and knowledge that I am secure in my soul and in my spirit for all of eternity because of Jesus' death on the cross. That is the advent of peace. That is the advent of peace. And whenever you hear someone say, gosh, this is just a hard season for me, can I tell you about the peace that Jesus gives me that surpasses all understanding? And I'm not saying ignore the hard things. I know we all have hard things and we're in hard places. But don't ignore that our souls are eternally secured. Don't ignore it. And don't forget to tell other people about it. Because when you do that, you're handing someone a glass of water that's drinking sand. That's why we go. That's why we go. Because we have the water that never runs dry. The water that never runs dry. And Jesus has made peace for all by the blood of his cross. Which brings us quickly back to John 1. I'm not going to read the whole passage. I would say read 9 through 14 later today. I think it's just really good, but I just want to focus on a couple of things. One, John 1:9, just four verses after where we started. The light, verse 5 ended with, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." And verse 9 says this, "The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world." The true light. Jesus isn't just the light. He is the true light. And not some poor substitute that we choose on any other given day. The true light. The true light. That promises brilliance to work for all of eternity. You know, the brighter the light is, the more brilliant it is. Not like it's smart, but it just shines more. Jesus' light will shine the same in eternity as it is right now. And we've all had those cheap toys or flashlights where they work for about a minute, right? They work for about a minute and you're shaking the batteries. Like, we've all done it. Like, why is this not working? Because it's crap. It doesn't work well. That's twice I said crap today. I'm so sorry. It doesn't work well. But for Jesus, his light never fades, because not only is he the light, he is the true light. I implore you, I beg you guys, to not live your life by a poor substitute. Don't. Because Jesus' brilliance is better. John 12 through 14. Let me just read this quickly. "But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born," remember, he's the firstborn, "who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, a glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." Full of grace and truth. Jesus became flesh, we said this a second ago, in the form of a baby, wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And he was full of grace and truth, the grace and truth that gives you and I the right to become children of God. I hope you're a child of God. We all are. We all have different levels of understanding it. There's only going to be one level that makes sense at the end of all things. Is that we have confessed and that we have believed. Believed. So I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're struggling with. I'm sure we all have struggles. I'm asking you, put your faith and trust in him, not in your ability to work your mind out of where you are. Believe. Believe and confess. Jesus became flesh so that you and I can be children of God. That's the advent of peace. You want to have the peace that the Bible's talking about? Act like a child. Act like a child. It's that simple. Act like a child. And not like a middle school child. That's not what I'm talking about, right? That's not what I'm talking about. So I think the band's going to come back. We're going to have a response song. And as they're coming back, because of the gift of Jesus' birth, we have peace, the peace that I think we should have, in three ways. In three. Number one, we've talked about it. I'm just going to say it. Number one, it's the only thing that needs to be said, but I'll say two more. Number one, most importantly, you and I have peace with God. We have peace with God. That's the most important part of peace, is that we don't have to work our way to God's level of holiness in righteousness, and we don't have to be perfect. Like, get off the hamster wheel of performance. It's just a works-based way of living your life. I would rather live a grace-based way, and I know it's hard, but live a grace-based way, and that's it. Number one, we have peace with God. Number two, we can make peace with ourselves. Time and time again, my conversation yesterday with people that we, with strangers, was, you don't understand where I've been. You don't understand what I've done. You don't understand what I'm doing. And every time I want to turn my life back to God, something gets in the way. you don't have peace with yourself that's flowing from the peace that you have with God, all you're doing is substituting works for His free gift of grace. Like it matters, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. How we live our lives does matter, for sure. It does. But if you're like, well, yeah, but you understand, I used to do this and that, and I did this and that, and there's all these repercussions from that choice, and all I see in the mirror are my bad choices. See the grace of Jesus that has been extended to you. You'll never understand what peace means until you let yourself off the hook. Because when we don't, here's what we do. We say, Jesus, will you just hang a little bit longer, please? Will you bleed just a little bit more? Will you please stay in the ground just a little bit longer so that I could somehow get to myself in a place where I could say, Tyler, I'm good, when I have nothing to do to say about whether I'm good or not. It's Jesus Christ. Please, have peace with yourself. And if you don't know how to do that, like, we could help you. We'll help you figure out what that looks like. Have that conversation. Let's be honest, but let's also not stay where we don't have to stay anymore. And then number three, we can now have, I love this, peace with others. Notice how it flows. It goes from God to us, to the inside, and now to the out. We can have peace with others. In a world that is marked with little peace in this country, and little agreement, and little whatever, like, we can actually have peace with the world and with others because the gospel is that big and that good. So, but the only way that happens is if we get out there and we share that message. We've got to be His hands and feet. There's a reason why we are. So, friends, if you're trying to find peace with God, yourself, or others without understanding and accepting and confessing the death of Jesus Christ, you'll never have it. You won't have it with God. You won't have it with yourself. You certainly won't have it with the world. You might have agreement in the world, but you won't have peace. You might be able to work your way towards something that, you know, within yourself that says, well, this is not too bad, but you'll never have security. And you certainly won't have it with God because either we're going to accept His sacrifice or He's going to accept ours. And I know I don't want mine because I know what I've done. I know how I've lived. I know what I did. I know what I haven't done. I know what I've thought. And yet I still have peace because of Jesus. So as we sing, I just invite you to come forward. If you need to make peace with God today or yourself or others, come forward. If you want someone to pray with you, you can do that on the front. If you want to just have some time to yourself, just go to the side. If you need to lay down the poor substitute of light that you're using to illuminate your path and embrace the true light of Jesus, I invite you to come forward and do that as well. Right? So wherever you are, I ask you to consider and ask how you would want the modem that's inside of you, hopefully that's pinging right now, to respond. Get connected. He's waiting. Will you stand and pray with me, please? God, as we sing and we respond, I'm thankful that it's not about me. I'm thankful that I don't have to make it all work. I'm thankful to Jesus, I just get to live in the light of Your life. The light that started in the form of a baby, that ministered for 3.5 years and showed others how to build Your kingdom and then go to the cross and into the grave on my behalf. And I'm so thankful that on Easter You resurrected. Because there is no resurrection without the birth. You had to get here first. And so, God, my desire for us this morning, individually and collectively as a church, that we would take a greater hold and understanding of what it means to be a firstborn like You in life and in death. And I know some of us today don't have peace. And I know we have some things that we have uneasiness about. God, we could just hand that over to You right now. I know some of us have family stuff and stuff with the world that's hard, and it's a tough place to be in right now because of all the things. Like, I ask that You would just prompt us to give it over to You. And if there's someone here that doesn't know You, Jesus, someone here that doesn't know You or needs to recommit their life to You, I pray that You would make it so. Today is the day. So as we sing and And we respond, Jesus, thank you. Thank you for leading us. Thank you for your light. Thank you that it doesn't have to be about our light. That we can instead turn the flashlight off of our lives. It's in Jesus' name. Amen.